In a world that's always changing, staying informed is key. That's why you trust First News Now for your latest local news. When it comes to your finances, trust First United Bank for the solutions you need. Whether it's a checking account, home loan, savings goal, or business service, we're here to help you make smart financial decisions. This is Charlie Day, Market Manager at First United Bank, where our team always puts you first. Please stop by to see us today. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender, NMLS 498-528.
Good morning and welcome back to our Crittenden Press podcast, your source for local news and sports. We're going to run through some of the top headlines that will get you going this week. And we're also going to take some time at the end of the podcast and visit with a local forester who has been in the community and doing some surveys. He has some interesting things to tell us about trees and nuts. So we will visit with him. But first, we're going to give you a little sampling of what's going on news-wise this week. Marion Crittenden County has a new joint code of ethics board, and its first meeting will be at 9 a.m. tomorrow on Tuesday at the county office complex. Now, this new three-person panel will oversee the code of ethics that has been adopted by the city and the county. Serving on the panel are Susan Yarbrough, former Mayor Mickey Alexander, and former County Magistrate Dan Wood. This new code of ethics applies not just to elected officials and candidates, but also to appointed leaders like the fire chief and the police chief. The new ordinance that was passed by both the city and the county recently sets rules against conflicts of interest, nepotism, misuse of public resources, and it requires financial disclosures. So some of that for the first time for some of these folks. The ethics board will investigate complaints, issue fines, and even refer cases for prosecution in the court system if necessary. Bottom line is public service in Crittenden County just got a higher bar for transparency and accountability, and we'll be closely following this. We'll be attending that meeting tomorrow, and as this group gets off the ground with its new responsibilities. Meanwhile, property taxes are back in the spotlight this week. Crittenden County Board of Education will meet on Tuesday, that's tomorrow night, 5:30 at Rocket Arena to finalize this year's tax rate. Based on discussions in meetings leading up to this, it does not appear there's going to be a major increase out of the school board. Most of the other local agencies have already set their tax rates. You can read all about tax rates and who's are going up, who's are staying the same in the Crittenden Press. Also, Tuesday morning, Crittenden County Chamber of Commerce meets at 8:30 a.m. in Rocket Arena, that conference room there on the campus. And the Caldwell County Fiscal Court will meet at 9 a.m. tomorrow morning at the courthouse. Remind you, this program is brought to you by advertising. I'll be back in just a moment after a message from one of our sponsors.
When your comfort's on the line, you don't want just anybody showing up at your door. You want neighbors you know and trust. That's why Hometown HVAC and Plumbing has you covered with two licensed technicians right here in Crittenden County. Whether it's heating, cooling, or plumbing, Hometown delivers expert service with a hometown touch. For trusted repairs and installation, call Hometown today at 270-388-0467. That's 270-388-0467. Hometown, where local service means everything.
Let's take a second and talk about the favorite topic on everybody's tongue these days, as it is in every season. It's the weather, of course. So things are going to warm back up this week, unfortunately. It's been a nice respite from the heat over the last 7 or 8 days. Been enjoying this nice fall-like weather. Unfortunately, we need a little more moisture in the air. Had a little bit of rainfall over the weekend. I got less than a quarter of an inch, or really actually probably less than an eighth of an inch in my rain gauge at home down near Francis. So I don't know what you got on in other parts of the county, but it was not much more than a heavy dew, to be honest with you. But, you know, looking back at weather over August, it was an unusual month. It kind of started out a little wet, but then dried up in the middle of the month, and we hadn't had any rainfall since. And what was unusual is we had a 48 degree morning during August. That was the lowest overnight low for the month of August that we've had in Crittenden County in more than 10 years. For those of you who read the Crittenden Press regularly, you'll know we do the weather almanac every month and kind of take a look back at the data from the previous month. So catch that in this week's paper and find out some interesting facts from that data on weather in August in Crittenden County. Tonight, Rocket Golf Team will be at Deer Lakes, and the soccer team will travel to Union County, and volleyball girls are at home against Trigg County. On Tuesday, soccer will be over at Hopkins Central. Volleyball will be home against Christian County, and the middle school football team travels to James Madison over in Madisonville. We're going to take another little break and hear from the folks over at Marion Pitt Barbecue. We'll be right back and visit with our area forester.
Are you hungry for slow-cooked, fall-off-the-bone flavor? Stop by Marion Pitt Barbecue, a local legend serving up mouth-watering barbecue for over 40 years. From juicy ribs and chicken to our famous pulled pork, Marion Pitt Barbecue offers big portions and even bigger value 7 days a week. On Tuesday and Friday, try our loaded smoked potato. Wednesday and Saturday, hickory smoked ribs. And Thursday and Sunday, barbecue chickens. Marion Pitt Barbecue, located on South Main Street in Marion. Come hungry, leave happy. Don't forget the sauce.
So now I'm going to play for you an interview I did with Kanan Duggar. He is a forester with the Kentucky Division of Forestry. He was in the area last week doing some surveys on some properties, and I had an opportunity to go out and visit with him and learn a lot of interesting information about trees. There'll be an article in this week's Crittenden Press about it. This is a rather lengthy interview. That's why I'm putting it at the end of the program today, that way in case some of you have to cut out. But for those of you who are arborists or tree lovers or plant lovers, this is pretty interesting. I'm going to play you the entire interview. It's about 11 minutes long. I hope you enjoy it.
So I'm here visiting with Kanan Duggar. He is a forester, and we're talking about mass production, acorns and other nuts that are of great interest right now to the folks who are beginning to head afield for the pursuit of wildlife, namely the white-tailed deer is probably the most popular wildlife that we hunt around this area. Kanan, tell us what you're out all the time doing surveys of land for their trees, of forest stands, so you get a up close view of what's going on out there. What's the mass production look like this year?
Right now, everything I've seen, a lot of the places I've stopped at and just parks and, you know, park trees and open grown trees are going to be a little different. They have a lot more resources than forest trees. But everything I've been seeing, the white oaks, they seem like they're going to have a good year. I think if I remember correctly, last year was a little weaker because we actually, with the division, usually about October, we go out and collect acorns and black walnuts for the state nursery, which is over in Calvert City. Mm-hmm. So it's all locally grown trees. It's a great, if you live in this area, it's a great place to go get seedlings. Mm-hmm. So I remember last year we were really mostly getting black walnut. I don't think white oak had a great year, and they're usually like that where, you know, they'll have bad years. And we were talking earlier about those bumper crop years. Mm-hmm. And usually kind of the span, it can be every 4 to 10 years, and they're loaded up and they drop, and mm-hmm. you'll literally see a carpet of mm-hmm. seedlings, you know, on the ground that next spring. And that's a great opportunity for landowners to kind of use those natural processes to get white oak regenerated, mm-hmm. you know, into their woods. But everything I'm seeing right now, they're really loaded down. I'm kind of curious of what this weather how it might affect it, you know.
Just late drought.
Late drought, you know, a lot of times, I can't speak for absolute certainty, but I would think that with this dry weather, they might be a little more susceptible to, you know, they get a lot of those, you know, worms and grubs and weevils and stuff that kind of get into them and stuff. But right now, I mean, I've definitely noticed white oak has been the better loaded down tree than red oak right now from what I've seen. But obviously, you know, white oak is for deer, you know, they contain less tannin, so they're sweeter, they taste better to deer, so they will preference white oak. But you know, any hunter knows they will try to get about anything they can get out there in the fall. So red oaks, black walnuts, hickory nuts, pecans, you know, there's all type of stuff, you know. And you know, I like to tell landowners, and it's easy to think when you're going out hunting, you know, you're thinking about that big white oak that you're going to sit under and they're going to be eating deers in the fall. But one thing I like to tell landowners is, you know, it's really important. You think about the white oaks in the fall, but you know, you got to consider all the time in the spring and the summer what they're eating, because they're not going to have acorns out there. So we talked about earlier today that stump sprouting is a really good opportunity if you can get into some of this timber stand improvement marking. Species like ash, elm, we've seen black gum, maple, even oak. You know, you might have a real junky, knotty, ice storm damaged oak, and if you can cut that at ground level, that root to shoot ratio, those sprouts will come out there just loaded down with nutrients. And right, really, that time is important, because in the summer and spring, you know, that's when they're rearing fawn, that's when their antlers are growing. So beyond just the big white oak producer, you know, out in the field or wherever you're hunting, like, people need to, you know, think about the spring and summer and doing stuff like that.
You're producing browse inside of a forest.
So
talk a little bit about the when these acorns fall. I know red oaks fall a little earlier, white oaks hold on a little longer. Talk with your expertise.
It's funny. It's like, I think most of the time when you're rolling the ankles in the woods, walking through acorns and nuts, that's when you know you had a good year and stuff. You know, it's just so variable, and I think the climate has such a big, not maybe climate, but just, you know, drought, wet seasons and stuff. I mean, I know black walnut, in my experience, like, that's usually one of the first to drop its leaves. I can't really say with any certainty of, like, what really drops first, or, you know, it could be some years red oak might drop before, and it might just have a heavier bundle of oaks, or for acorns, and they just might drop quicker and stuff. And, you know, obviously, we talk about hard mast, and there's a lot of soft mast out there, and kind of same deal when we're talking about that timber and stand improvement work, like your mulberries, persimmons, cherries, we have farkleberry, hawthorn, deciduous holly. There's a lot of much soft mast out there, you know.
They fall, early summer?
Yeah, that's when they start, you know, making their berries and stuff. And again, that's another one of those components with that stump sprouting, giving them something to, you know, grow their antlers, rear more fawn. And I would say that's just as important. Like, obviously, if we're getting the deer, you're going to find them over a white oak tree or, you know, some type of acorn source, hard mast source. But if you're one of the big deers, more deer on your property, I would really consider trying to do more stump sprouting and stuff like that in the spring and summer. Because it'll definitely pay itself forward if you can try to get some of that stuff going and stuff.
So one last question. This may be a tough one. If you take an acorn and you create from it a treeling, you know, sprout, how long before that acorn that you use as that sprouts before it is a tree that produces acorns?
Yeah, that's you know, it can take a long time. You know, in the lifespan of a tree, I mean, I've heard numbers. It really, a lot of it's species-wise, and deer hunters
in
will
normal,
know.
Normal growing conditions.
Yeah, if you took an acorn out of the field, grew it in a pot, transplanted it, you know, you get some of those issues with transplanting and dieback, and oaks are really good about establishing that root system first. I mean, I've seen anywhere, you know, white oak, maybe 20-plus years, 25, 30. If any hunters, you know, you probably heard about sawtooth oak. That's kind of been a big thing in the deer hunting community, and those are really planted. They're not native, they're from Japan. Luckily, they don't really spread like some of the other invasives we talked about this morning, but those right there, the reason people preference is because they will start producing like 15, 20 years. So that's one of the shorter spans. So for a good white oak tree, I mean, you're looking probably a couple decades. So, and we were talking about this morning, it's like, obviously nothing wrong with planting a tree and growing it, but you know, my MO is kind of, let's work with what you got out there, because we're in one of the most productive, diverse, you know, hardwood forests in the world. I guarantee you're going to have some oak out there probably. You're going to have some walnuts, and it's always worth trying to work with what you got because, you know, you might have a 10-year, 15-year head start, and, you know, if you're hunting and trying to harvest timber, that's a, in, you know, our lifetimes, that's a significant, you know, head start for it.
And what you're saying, working with what you've got, you mean cutting trees, competition around it and to release it and let it grow more rapidly.
Yeah. Yeah. And the position we're in now, if you get into kind of the literature about it, you know, we used to manage, you know, everyone thinks cutting timber is bad. And obviously if it's not done responsible and you're just taking all the big white oaks, it can be bad. But the way we used to manage, you know, this is pre World War II, you know, maybe into the 50s at the latest, like we were cutting hard. You know, we were burning all the industrialization, clearing forests, and really it kind of, you know, even before our time here, Native Americans did a lot of burning. They did a lot of really specific timber stand improvement, copse cutting stuff, and it's really kind of made our tree species like oak and hardwoods tolerant to fire. So what happened is, you know, I guess in the kind of 1940s, 50s, roughly, you get Smokey the Bear come out and burning's bad. So we got a little way from the burning, and then you got into a lot of woods nowadays, and you see this kind of prolific amount of maple, elm, ash, stuff like that that's shade tolerant. So we've stopped burning, stopped managing, and right now we're at this point where you still have a lot of your hardwoods like oak and hickory in the overstory, but you have this real thick layer of midstory of these shade tolerant species, and basically it's creating this buffer where not enough light's getting to the forest floor. Yeah. And you're not getting that regen, and and for us, that's the biggest thing right there is just taking out those, because maple and ash and elm, like winged elm specifically, like there's just not a lot of wildlife or timber value, so you won't have to lose a lot of sleep taking and cutting them out, and if you're doing it for hardwoods and oak and stuff, it makes a big difference, especially, you know, we looked at some of your woods today, and you're saying some of those are maybe 15, 20, 25 years old, and, you know, right now they're kind of choked out. Oak's really good about tolerating shade, and and it gives them one of those points where, you know, size is not always indicator of age, you know. You can have a little tiny pole-sized tree that's been stuck in the shade. That thing could be 30 years old, but then you have a massive poplar, and those are shade intolerant, so usually those are the first to come up, and they go tall and straight, and so it's one of those things, like, that extra light, and if, especially if you're, they already have established root system, you go in there and take that extra canopy shade out, they can really make some good progress in a shorter amount of time relatively. So our time scale and a tree's time scale is obviously a lot different. So, and essentially what we're doing, you know, if you think about it, like we're basically mimicking natural disaster. So we have ice storms. It's crazy. I'll be out in the woods, and I was out one day before yesterday, and you can still see damage from that ice storm in 2008, 2009. So you got tornadoes, ice storms, insect disease, and you know that you can't put a time scale on those because they, you know, they happen here and there, but essentially we're going out there and we're recreating a tornado or we're recreating an ice storm and making taking that disturbance on our time scale. So basically it's applied disturbance in a nutshell.
Well, I'm always fascinated by this the intelligence and the expertise that you folks in forestry bring. Trees are fun.
It's one of those things you'll never, as soon as you think you know everything, you should stop, because you're learning something new every day, and that's the beauty of it. And it's one of those things, if you, I encourage people, like especially hunters are good about it, you know, you'll know your trees and stuff, but a lot of people, landowners, that maybe have no idea what the difference between a hickory and oak is. And I always tell, it's like analogy of like opening a faucet. It's like once you turn that faucet on, it's really hard to stop looking at it that way. I'm guilty myself. I'll be driving down the road and you're looking and trying to look at stuff, and you know, it's an ongoing process, and there's always something to learn from wildlife people and landowners and other coworkers, and I think foresters generally, from my experience, are pretty easygoing, not a lot of ego in forestry, and you know, easy to get along with. So
and again, we appreciate Kane and Duggar's time with the Kentucky Division of Forestry. And that's going to be a wrap on today's program. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll catch you a little later in the week. This has been Chris Evans reporting for the Crittenden Press.